My first guest in this edition is K.T. McFarland. She served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for President Reagan, and she also served in the Nixon and Ford administrations. We want to get her thoughts on a couple of pressing national security issues, namely the North Korean nuclear threat reemerging in a major way over the past few days. And K.T.'s also recently been in Afghanistan, which is now the focal point once again in the Obama administration's prosecution of the war on terror. And K.T., great to have you with us.
Delighted.
Let's start with North Korea. That's a Cold War relic, which is obviously a focal point of yours from your time in serving this country. What do you make of this country moving not only back towards a nuclear program in an aggressive way, but doing so blatantly and boldly with not just the underground nuclear test for the second time, but also several missile tests?
Well, North Korea, their foreign policy has always been a swing between bluster and brinksmanship. But the question is, why are they doing this and why are they doing this now? In part, it's probably to mask their succession crisis. Their leader, Kim Jong-il, has had a stroke. We don't know how debilitated he is, but we do know that there's jockeying internally over succession, and he wants one of his sons to take over for him. So this could be their attempt to keep the world at bay while they sort themselves out, and it could also be an internal political maneuver for them to play up to the hawkish military for support for Kim's son. But, you know, at the end of the day, Greg, it doesn't really matter what the motives are. The question is this something to worry about, and what should we do about it? We know that negotiating with the North Koreans hasn't worked. We negotiate a deal, then they negotiate the implementation of the deal, and then they renegotiate, and then they renege. So the question is, who's got leverage over North Korea? And that's China. China is, without China, North Korea doesn't have food, fuel, or gas. And so far, China has been reluctant to put the skids on North Korea. I think that may be changing now, because as North Korea has really ratcheted up the testing, the nuclear testing, the missile testing, as you pointed out, and the rhetoric, you've got to wonder if South Korea, and even more worrisome from China's perspective, Japan, is saying to themselves, maybe we need to rearm, maybe we need to have nuclear weapons. And that is China's biggest nightmare, is a powerful Japan, economically dominant, and with nuclear weapons. So it may be that China thinks this is the time to get on the phone and say to North Korea, hey guys, let's cool it for a while.
What are the signs, KT, that China is really serious about exercising the muscle that you said they really can call the shots for North Korea if they want to? Well, when are we going to see that they mean business?
I think we're going to see it really soon, or we're not going to see it. If I were Secretary Clinton, I would immediately press China, quietly probably, but press them to say, now's the time. If you're going to ever do anything to stop this, do it now. And there are a couple of things the Chinese could do. They could pick up the phone and say, you know, North Korea, you stop now or else. But even if China doesn't, there's some things that we can do. We should freeze North Korean assets immediately. You know, we had frozen them, and then we unfroze them about a year or so ago, 2 years ago, when it looked like they were negotiating in good faith. But go ahead and freeze them now, especially the international financial holdings of the Kim family. And the second thing is, if we cannot stop North Korea's nuclear program, and by stop, I mean stop soon, not stop 2 years from now, but more or less stop it dead in its tracks and reverse it, then I think we need to start, we need to contain North Korea and make sure that whatever ships are leaving North Korean ports and are headed to other parts of the world are not carrying missile technology or nuclear weapons. And in fact, there is a UN resolution that allows us to do that, but what we need to do is enforce it now.
A couple of follow-ups on what you just mentioned there, KT. First of all, what have we learned from these tests, not just the saber-rattling and the diplomacy aspect of this, but how successful were these nuclear and missile tests from what we know?
Well, they weren't terribly successful, but, you know, they're at it. I mean, they've tested 2 years ago. They tried to test an underground nuclear weapon that apparently didn't go very well. The one that they've just tested last week, we suspect, has been far more successful. They've had a number of long-range missile tests that every time they do it, they get a little bit better at it. They haven't perfected it, certainly. But the problem with this is, I don't really worry that North Korea is going to wake up, you know, Tuesday morning and say, let's nuke San Francisco. But I do worry that they sell this stuff, because North Korea doesn't make anything the world wants to buy except nuclear weapons and missiles. And we know that Iran has observers and engineers on the ground in Pyongyang observing the missile tests, observing the nuclear tests. And we know that Iran has bought nuclear technology and missile technology from North Korea. We know that they've sold it to Syria. We know they've sold it to Libya. So for me, it's not so much what are they going to do in their region, but who are they going to sell this stuff to?
KT, last question on the North Korean aspect of our discussion today, and that's what you mentioned a moment ago, that they are now saying that any action on the part of the South Koreans or the U.S. to inspect cargo coming into the country will warrant an attack. That's pretty imminent stuff. How do you expect that to play out?
Well, North Korea, as much as they want to, you know, act like the tough guy on the block, they're not about to go to war with the United States. And we have a mutual defense treaty with South Korea. And on the demilitarized zone on the border between North and South Korea, we have American troops there. We have U.S. Army there. So any attack by North Korea to the south immediately trips the wire of U.S. forces. And they may be crazy, but I don't think they're quite that crazy. And as far as declaring an act of war if we board their ships, well, there's already a UN Resolution 1718 which allows that. It's called the Proliferation Security Initiative. There are about 95 countries that are members. South Korea just signed up for it yesterday. And that it gives us the right to stop, board, and search North Korean ships that we suspect of having nuclear materials. Now, the next question is, if we stop, search, and observe, are we allowed to seize? And we're not quite there yet, but that would be the next step. That's where we should push it.
We're talking with KT McFarland. She served in the Pentagon during the Reagan years, also worked under Presidents Ford and Nixon. And KT, I know you're also recently in Afghanistan, now once again the hottest part of the war on terror. Obviously, the fighting between Pakistani forces and the Taliban is extremely intense. We've got a humanitarian crisis going on there. You were on the ground. What did you notice? What should we be focusing on most right now?
The thing that concerned me the most, Greg, and you know, and I'm a hawk. I'm a pro-military hawk, and I believe in the mission. But I'm concerned in Afghanistan that there's no clarity of mission. I mean, what are we trying to do there? Are we trying to build a democratic society? Are we trying to create social institutions to create a democratic society? Are we trying to kill al-Qaeda? Are we trying to go after bad guys? I mean, you know, al-Qaeda has left Afghanistan. They've moved on. They have moved on to greener pastures in Pakistan. So if that's our goal and our motive is to either get rid of them or to deny them safe sanctuary to return to Afghanistan, well, that's a different set of requirements and objectives than to build a democratic society in Afghanistan. And they require very different resources and often competing resources. So I think what President Obama needs to do is to get specific. He said that his goal is to destroy, defeat al-Qaeda, but al-Qaeda is no longer in Afghanistan. And yet, if you talk to the people on the ground, I didn't talk to one person, Greg, who thought that anything less than a five-year U.S. military commitment would make a difference. Now, I don't think the public will is there, and I certainly don't see President Obama making the case that the United States should have a long-term commitment to Afghanistan. And even then, at the end of the day, let's say we got somehow miraculously Afghanistan brilliantly well, there's Pakistan. And that's the real problem, is Pakistan and 90 nuclear weapons.
Well, let's talk about both here in our last couple minutes real quickly. How did folks in Afghanistan answer the question that you're still trying to answer? How did they articulate what their mission was?
Well, they articulate the mission as, you know, defeating and destroying al-Qaeda, but then out of the next sentence they talk about all of the, you know, the infrastructure building that they're doing in Afghanistan, which is great. I mean, gosh, it's what America does well. But again, how much is it going to cost? How long is it going to take? And what's our goal? What's our end game here? And it's not clear to me that that they figured that out yet.
And on the Pakistani side of this equation, obviously there's a relatively weak government there.
Yes.
It seems as though the military is doing better in fighting back the Taliban and other extremist forces. What's your sense of what's happening there?
Yeah, I think that finally they've stepped up, and there does seem to be some recognition on the part of Asif Ali Zardari, who actually is an acquaintance of mine. I knew his wife pretty well when we were in graduate school together. But they have now finally realized that their main enemy is not India, but it's the enemy within, which is the Taliban. So they have started going after the Taliban, devoting resources to it. The real problem with Pakistan is that in their military and in their intelligence services, they are infiltrated with Taliban, al-Qaeda sympathizers. So until they clean house, which everyone has been reluctant to do, the threat is not going away. The Taliban is funded by Afghanistan drug money, and so they have deep pockets. I don't think the Taliban is going away anytime soon unless the Pakistan army cracks down on it. Now, they've done pretty well so far. They've gone in the Swat Valley and they've pushed back the Taliban, but are they going to clean house in among their own? And they have not yet done that.
KT, unfortunately, our time is up. You've had a very busy couple of weeks being in both Asia and South Asia, I guess, two different trips. Thank you so
much.
Every
place I go blows up. This is not a good sign.
But you also have firsthand knowledge. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Greg. Bye-bye.
KT McFarland served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for President Reagan. She also served in the administrations of Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford. Read more about her work at ktmcfarland.com. This is Dateline Washington.